Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Welcome back to another episode. Today, Brian Myers, a senior contributor at Caffeinated Thoughts, is taking over the podcast. He interviewed Natalie Ogborn. He actually does an introduction of Natalie, so I'll let him do that. Before that interview, first, a word from our sponsor.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
Natalie Ogborn is a writer and public speaker who has a unique focus on walking in faith using her experiences in the great outdoors. She's a wife, a homeschool mom, and a follower of Christ. She also happens to be my niece. Welcome to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast, Natalie.
Hi, Uncle Brian.
You're supposed to say hi. Glad to be here.
Well, I am glad to be here.
Okay. All right. You've described yourself as a conflicted outdoorsy type and a reluctant hiker. Both of those are quotes. Yet, here you are writing and speaking on those very things. So tell us about the conflicted and the reluctant parts. What do you mean by that?
Well, they both have a couple of different pieces. And the reason I share them, I think, is because I want people to understand accurately who they're reading or who they're hearing from. I want people to understand that I am not a diehard outdoors person, but that it's not always not always easy for me, even though I love the outdoors. I'm conflicted in part because I don't like bugs. I don't like to be dirty. I don't like to be too hot. I don't like to be too cold. I don't want to get wet. And I don't like to be uncomfortable in any way.
That just describes an outdoorsy person.
It does.
To the max, doesn't it?
Hence the conflicted.
Oh, dear.
But if you're going to get out on the trail, you're going to see bugs. You're going to get dirty. You're going to be too hot, too cold, or wet. And you might even have to go to the bathroom out there. And I don't like any of that. But I know that I am.
This doesn't sound like conflicted. This sounds like terrified.
A little bit.
You're not going to be climbing Everest or going to the Amazon tomorrow, and I take it.
No, I'm not.
Okay. All right.
Even with all that, I know that I'm at my absolute best heart, mind, soul, and body when I get outside regularly. But even with that, I still struggle to get there, even though I know that that's the best thing for me. I always have one more load of laundry I want to put in, one email I want to answer. There's always one thing that I want to do before I just even go outside into my own yard. And so I have two levels of conflicted there.
So it's not just being outside, it's also getting outside.
Is.
Okay.
Is.
But now you've been doing this for a long time now.
Yeah.
So surely the reluctance has mitigated over all these years and all these trips out west and all of these vacations and all of these hikes. Some of this stuff surely has mitigated over the years.
It has. The stuff I don't like to do, I've decided I can live with, and I do. I'm willing to go do the hard work and encounter the things I don't like. The reluctance is actually a little bit different. There's the initial reluctance was that I flat out did not like to hike. And mom and dad took us to Yellowstone for the first time when I was 12. I don't think we really hiked until I was 13 because we were afraid of bears. Or maybe 14. We went back a couple years later. And I really wasn't interested in hiking. But as you can imagine, dad wasn't going to leave me in a car.
Not a good idea.
No. As you can also imagine, because you know me, I wasn't necessarily silent about the fact that I didn't enjoy getting out on the trail, and I probably complained a little. But I spent about 20 years not enjoying hiking. I hiked with my family because that's what we did. I lived and worked in Yellowstone, and I hiked even by myself because I was in Yellowstone, and why would I not do that? And then I hiked with my husband and our kids because my husband liked to hike, and I knew there was good stuff for the kids out there to see.
So you're two decades into this and you still don't enjoy hiking?
No, I didn't.
At that point?
I didn't. But then there came this time where I had slowly learned that it was actually better to get out of the car and onto the trail. And I've been perfectly satisfied.
That's good to get out of the car.
It is. I had been perfectly satisfied riding through the car next to the woods rather than getting out and on my own 2 feet, walking through the woods. I just really didn't get the point for a long time. But slowly, over those 20 years, I began to think of the destination as worth it. Okay, you know, that was kind of lame getting here, but it was worth it to see this thing. And then, somewhere over those 20 years, I began to understand that I smelled things out there that I couldn't smell in the car. And I could hear the breeze and feel the breeze and enjoy the breeze and see things differently and experience things differently. And maybe this hiking thing was worth it. And so I had about 10 years of bliss where I wasn't a reluctant hiker. I was kind of a...
You were getting into it a little bit.
I was.
Okay.
I was getting into it. And then probably about 10 years ago, my husband and our kids and I started seeing bears out on the trail. And up until then, we'd only ever seen bears from the car. Mm-hmm. And I never, ever, ever wanted to see a bear on the trail. And four different times we saw bears out on the trail, twice with our children and twice just with my husband and I. And the last time we saw a bear was at pretty close range. The Park Service, their mandate is 100 yards between you and a bear, and it's your responsibility to keep it. And the last time we ran into a bear, we were initially at, Jamie thinks, about 70 feet. And that actually got to a smaller distance. And
so it wasn't quite so fun again all of a sudden.
No, it wasn't. And I developed a new kind of reluctance. Now, every time we go to get on the trail, I have to think about it. When we first started hiking, bear spray was something that you heard about. You know, you knew it existed. But the hiking books didn't say to carry it. The Park Service didn't promote it. And I kind of figured that maybe those backpackers that hitchhiked their way through Yellowstone, and if you picked one up, they smelled really bad. I thought they might, because we've done that. I thought they might carry bear spray. And I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, somewhere in there, Jamie started carrying bear spray sometimes, not all the time. And so we tried to be smart. But now every time we're going to go out on the trail, I have this dread in my stomach about what's going to happen. And I have to revisit, you know, what do we need to do? Are we doing what we need to do to be smart
sure.
and safe?
Sure.
And then I have to wrestle with the reality of God's sovereignty in my life.
Okay. So we've kind of seen the dark side here. That here we have a woman who deeply appreciates the great outdoors, mm-hmm. uses it for spiritual inspiration, but has really struggled trying to embrace it. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that's an interesting concept, actually. Somebody is as reluctant as you are, ended up so deeply committed to it. So let me move into a different area here. When you're taking you're taking in the great outdoors, mm-hmm. and that spiritual inspiration is coming from that. Is it God's revealing himself in nature, or is it the experiences that you have in nature that evokes this spiritual inspiration for you?
I think that it's both. I think the Psalms is really clear that the heavens declare and are declaring the glory of God. Romans is really clear that by what God has created. We know that he is. We know, we can know about him. We can know him because of what he has created. And because of how he has made me, I think I'm a little bit sensitive to what's happening out there, what he's done. And he has used time on the trail to connect spiritual dots for me, to take something I've read in the Word or something that I've heard in a sermon, and I've seen something and gone, oh, that's what that means. That's what that looked like. That's what it would manifest itself like in my life. So it's more just a sense of clarification of what I've heard and seen and been made more real in a way that I can understand it.
Okay. Okay. You've also said that Yellowstone has your heart. And one of the questions that occurred to me is, okay, why Yellowstone? It's a fantastic place, of course. I've been out there a number of times. But you live, for example, near Stevens State Forest. And I've been, it was years ago, but I went down there hiking and camping with Debbie, you know, when we were first married. Hmm. So that's been a day or two ago. But anyway, you live close to there, for example. So why Yellowstone as opposed to something that's essentially in your backyard like Stevens State Forest, just as an example? What drives your connection to Yellowstone and your love for the place?
Mm-hmm. My oldest daughter was helping me put together some words for my book proposal, and they didn't end up working very well for my book proposal, but I think they work really well to answer that question. And what she said was, a girl goes to Yellowstone and never really comes back. And that would explain me to a degree. Huh. And here's what that looks like. I obviously did come back, but because of my family's travel habits, we went back to Yellowstone again and again and again. And then I went out there and I worked. And then I took my husband out there before we'd been married 2 years. Each one of our kids made it to the park before, in their infancy. And it's just always been there. And I lived in the same community from the time I was 5 until I went off to college. And then I had my college years of being in and out, and then I moved to the community where I met my husband. And we, since then, have made 3 cross-state moves, which is 2 or 3 more than I imagined we would.
So at the end of the day, you've been going there so often from the time you were
12,
mm-hmm. that it just seemed to be a natural kind of a thing. This is where we go. This is what we do.
Right.
This is how I feel when I get there.
Yeah. It's the constant that I've had in my life. And the first time that I went there with Jamie, we got there very, very late at night, 2 a.m. And so we walked into the inn where I had worked and where my family always stayed, and walked into the very empty lobby, and this heavy door closed behind us. And it's this big double wooden door, and it closed with its very distinctive thud. And then the iron latch fell into place with its very distinctive clank.
Clank.
Yeah. And I had worked to the cadence of that door for a whole summer. And I had just sat and whiled away evenings with my family to the cadence of that door for a week at a time for years. And I realized when I heard that, or I heard that with my ears, and I had this physical sense when I heard that I was home, and I didn't really understand that I'd been gone. And so it's...
So it had an enormous level of familiarity at that point.
It did.
It very much seemed like home to you.
It did. And I think where your home is where your heart is.
All right, I get it. All right. You have, speaking of Yellowstone, you have a particular blog post that's really useful if you're a first-time visitor to Yellowstone. It's called Preparing for a Satisfying Visit. Do I have that right?
You do.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
That particular post grew out of the fact that I realized as I looked at my body of work, at my blog and my speaking, that almost all of it originated somehow with the story of Yellowstone. And I've written a book devoted to Yellowstone, and yet there was no real practical information about Yellowstone on my blog. And so I started to build what I think of as a Yellowstone library of more practical information for Yellowstone visitors. And kind of the way that I was thinking about this particular post is when I worked in the park, I had a lot of visitor contact because I was a gift shop cashier, and people would just automatically tell you about their highs and their lows in the park. Either they'd be all excited and they want to tell you something, or they would be complaining. And I got both. And I also volunteered at the visitor center and at the Old Faithful area, and I got the same thing. And Jamie and I have visited there for a lot of years. We've had highs and we've had lows. People don't have to know me very long before they realize I'm a Yellowstone person. They tell me their highs and their lows. And so I started to see kind of some areas of frustration for people when they go to Yellowstone. And I tried to write a post that would help people prepare for those typical areas of frustration, really encouraging people to set their mind for what Yellowstone is, mm-hmm. not what they'd like it to be.
Yes.
I think a lot of times when we go to the wilderness, we go there to experience solitude. And then we're surprised when we look around.
People everywhere.
And discover yeah. that there are all sorts of people wanting yeah. to experience solitude.
Well, another thing that you mentioned in that list of recommendations, if you will,
yeah.
In that blog post that I thought was spot on, is people don't understand the enormity of that place. So, I mean, you can't just go out there and experience Yellowstone in a day or two.
No.
It's just too vast. And so that's a real critical point that you have in your blog post, to just let people know this is a big, big place. You're not going to go in there and have a picnic and come home in a day.
No.
And think you've really accomplished much of anything.
But people arrive there believing that. I especially experienced that at the visitor center. I remember one yeah. particular guy showed up and he said, okay, I'm here for the afternoon. And I want to see it all.
The afternoon?
Yeah, he was driving through.
I'm going to see it all. Right.
Where should I start? And,
what do you say to them?
Well, what's your favorite?
Yeah, why don't you just stay here?
Right, because you can spend an afternoon yeah. in the Old Faithful area and have plenty to do. So Yellowstone is the size of Rhode Island and Delaware. Neither one of those are particularly large states, but they're states.
Yeah.
And we look at a map of Yellowstone and go, okay, well, that doesn't look so far. It's a ways.
Yep.
And the roads are really slow.
Yeah, you're not going to drive 70 miles an hour to get across the area.
That's
you're exactly right. And to people who've never been there before, I mean, to people who've been there a lot, this probably seems silly, but if you haven't been there before, it's critical that you mm-hmm. know that going mm-hmm. in.
I think it's, even if you've been there before, the visitation has changed so much that it's always okay. getting worse. When I worked there in 87, they were at about 2 million visitors a year. And within the last few years, they've broken the 4 million.
They've doubled the size yeah. of the attendance. Wow.
They have.
That's
and
amazing.
There's still the same amount of road. And there's still two lane. It's not a four lane mm-hmm. highway. It's a two lane highway. 45 mile an hour, and so it's the pressure on the place is great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a moment ago, you've written a book that you hope to have published soon. And it's really unique in that it is what we might call a spiritual reflection on experiences in Yellowstone. Now, is that a fair, have I characterized that in a fair way?
You have. It's a travel memoir. And I'm a Christian, so my reflections on the travel are definitely spiritual in nature.
Okay. All right. So tell us a little bit about that, and then also tell us the name of the book.
Okay.
I didn't want to forget that.
All right. The book is called The Places That Shape Us, Finding Home in Yellowstone National Park. And I chose that name because Yellowstone has had a huge shaping influence on me. And I've already discussed a little bit about what a home that it's been, proven itself to be for me.
So you've got how many chapters in the book?
There's about 12.
And I've read one chapter. Mm-hmm. I have been given a pre-publication release of one chapter, which I've read. So are all of the chapters kind of like what I read?
They are very similar to what you've read.
So you'll have a particular experience, mm-hmm. and describe it in detail. And then you'll also share towards the end of the chapter the spiritual implications of the experience you've just had, something along those mm-hmm. lines?
It is, yes. It is predominantly story, probably 90-95% story. And the story is Yellowstone, me and various members of my family in Yellowstone, and what God has done in me in Yellowstone. And so there's an experience or two. There's information woven in there about the park's history, the park's animals, the park's geology.
So if somebody just wants to know a little bit about Yellowstone, this book is going to have a standalone purpose in that regard, correct?
Yes. Yes, it is. And in some of those chapters that you ask about, the spiritual observations are very, very overt.
Okay.
And in some of them, they're...
a little less so.
Less so,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. A book's a huge undertaking, and I always ask people who've written one what prompted them to write it. So what was it that motivated you to take on such a project as this?
With this particular... Well, I've written one book. I shouldn't say with this particular book.
Well, it's a particular book relative to other books, yes. Whether you're the author or not,
yes.
Right?
I knew that this book was there in me. It's not like I had a goal to write a book someday. I just knew that this book was there inside me waiting to be written. I've probably known that for 20 years, maybe since I started to like hiking. And one day... a young friend of mine contacted me and asked if I would mind meeting with her and critiquing chapters of her book. And I thought, well, that sounds like fun. Plus, it's summer, and so I wasn't teaching, and I thought, maybe this is the time to start the book. I didn't know. I'd never kept notes. I didn't have an idea of what the book would be, what its shape was, what its point was. I just started writing and let it go from there. Probably the big motivation was just to tell the story and to be responsive to and responsible with the gifts that God had given me. Has given me and the story that he's woven into my life with Yellowstone.
Okay. So did you have, I realize you just kind of went with it, is what you just said there, if I can characterize it that way. But did you have a particular end game? Did you have a goal at that time?
Not when I started. When I started, it was just to write the book. But as I...
As the project went on.
Yes, okay. As the project went on, I realized, well, because when I started, I didn't know if it was just for my family, if it was for publication. I just started writing the book. But as I began to work through it, I realized that what I would really like to do is contribute to the very small body of work that is travel memoir on the Christian market.
Uh-huh.
The general market has all kinds of travel
tons
memoir.
Everywhere.
Yeah, outdoor adventure, the stuff that my book is. But within the Christian market, it's so rare to the point that it was really difficult to come up with comparative titles for a book proposal. So that became a goal in writing the book itself.
Okay. So What are you hoping now that the project is complete? What are you hoping that the reader is going to take away from this book when they're done reading it? Obviously, they're going to know more about mm-hmm. Yellowstone than they did when they, you know, opened the book. But beyond that, what kinds of hopes do you have for the reader in that regard?
I really hope that the reader would see Yellowstone as a place that was created on purpose, for a purpose, and that the same God who created Yellowstone created them, and it's still a work in Yellowstone and is still at work in them. I hope that they, even though they might not have that same sense of correlating a walk in the woods and a walk of faith that I have, that they might see some of that through my experiences. I hope that their faith would be encouraged with whatever struggle that they're having with. The thing that came out as I wrote this book was fear, was something that I seemed to resurface a lot.
Because of all that reluctance.
Imagine. I hope that a reader would maybe reconnect with their own special place from their growing up years or earlier years, because a lot of us have that place, whether it's, you know, grandma's kitchen or out in the timber with grandpa or whatever that is. We have different shaping places, and I hope it would stir the memory for those people. Huh. I hope that people might be encouraged to go to Yellowstone or go back to Yellowstone.
Or maybe go back to that special place.
Yes.
That this particular book is going to trigger in their minds.
Yes. Yeah. And I hope that they would enjoy it, because above all, a good book should be a joy to read.
Well, I can tell you from having read the one chapter, you get a lot in there. There's humor, you know, and then there's a lot of detail about the experience itself. There's a lot going on in the one chapter that I've read. Speaking of which, that chapter was on fly fishing. Mm-hmm. And having done some fly fishing myself, I was pretty impressed with the fact that your first time out, not only did you catch 3 trout, but one of them was a brown. That, at least in my experience, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was told, you know, I'm fairly still somewhat ignorant when it comes to fly fishing, but I was told that was a pretty big deal by my husband and our guide that we had.
I remember, it's probably been 20 years ago or so, probably closer to 25. I was in the Black Hills, and I made up my mind. I used to go out there 4 times a year on business. I still do. But I was out there in the summer, and I made up my mind, I'm going to do some fly fishing over in Spearfish Canyon. And there's a little spot there. There's what used to be a dam there. And I don't know if they were using it years ago for hydroelectric or what, but there's a little dam there. And you can look, and the water's just clear as a bell, and you can look and you can just see dozens and dozens of decent sized trout, you know, just all hanging out together there. So you got all these other guys out there, you know, casting away, and you know, nothing much is happening, and I'm showing up here. This is my first time of fly fishing out there. So I walk up to a guy and I say, okay, this is my first time. I have no clue what I'm doing. You know, what should I tie on the end of my line? He said, get something nice and bright. I'm going to make sure that the fish sees it. Okay. So I, you know, reached into my little tackle box and pulled out, you know, a nice bright white and orange, you know, fly, tie it on there. Second cast, I caught one. He wasn't huge, but I you know, I caught a rainbow, and the that poor guy, he's standing next to me in just utter disbelief at what I had just done. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I say all that to say I can relate very much with you know, the idea that you did very, very well on your first trip out there. That's pretty cool. In your book, it's pretty clear that that fishing trip involved a very challenging hike, to say the least. Mm-hmm. When that trip was over, were you able to reflect and say, wow, I caught three trout. One of them was a brown. That's really cool. Or did the hike end up being so difficult for you that it didn't matter anymore? You just wanted to go home.
So here's how it was, I think. My first response was relief and euphoria. Because early on, when I realized that I had been badly outfitted and I was in trouble and I was following a guide and couldn't just turn around and go back, I worried that I would need to be rescued. I'm a little overdramatic, but I just couldn't imagine how I was going to make it back by myself. And I prayed about that.
I understand. You had the wrong foot gear on.
Yeah.
And it was going to make a long, long trek back there.
And
very, very difficult. Yeah. And I can understand that was a concern.
It was. And so my first response was just euphoria and relief. And then once I was safely in the vehicle, returning to the comfort of my home, well, our hotel, then I got to thinking, you caught those trout. You did.
Okay. All right. So eventually you were able to reflect on that and say, that was cool.
Yes. Yes.
Once you weren't worried sick about not being able to walk back.
Yes. Yes. Once I knew that I was going to make it out, or that I had made it out, I enjoyed that.
Well, It was quite a deal. You wrote in your blog about visiting Yellowstone in 1989, which was 1 year after the devastating fire in 1988. And for me, that was really interesting because my wife and my daughter and I were there in August of 88. And that's when the fires were burning everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I can remember how surreal it was at times. And you would look up in the sky and you'd see what appeared to be thunderheads, you know, big billowing clouds. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, oh man, it's like a thunderstorm moving in. It wasn't a thunderstorm. It was smoke. Mm-hmm. And you could smell it in the air. And you know, I can remember that smell stayed in our car for days after we left. And you'd be driving along through there and there'd be fires on both sides of the road. Mm-hmm. You know, and you just kept right on driving because you really didn't have any choice, you know. And of course, as you pointed out earlier, there was a lot of people there. So there's a whole line of cars driving through areas that if you had other places to go, you'd rather be there mm-hmm. than be driving through that fire. So anyway, for me, it was downright scary at some times and surreal at others. But you were there the following year and you saw something else. You saw new life.
I did. I did. I didn't know what to expect when we got there because I was home in this very house watching the evening news night after night after night and seeing those pictures. And so when we went back to Yellowstone, as we approached, I thought, am I going to recognize this? Because one of the things that the media was really pressing was Yellowstone is being destroyed. It will be unrecognizable. And I thought, okay, am I going to recognize it for what it was? And Yellowstone, for me, is one of those places where I could fall asleep while somebody else is driving, wake up an hour later and look around and know where I was. I could see.
You had such familiarity with the place.
Yes. And I wondered, am I going to be able to recognize it? And so we drove in and, you know, there were places you couldn't even tell there'd been a fire. And there were places you could tell there'd been one in the distance. And then I drove through those places you had driven through, where there was fire on both sides, and all that was left were these standing skeletal remains of trees. And that's what dominated the landscape, and that's what dominated my attention until we got to this one area, the Lewis Canyon area. The Lewis Canyon area is kind of a little scary to drive through anyway, because one side is a sloping hillside and the other side is just a drop off into a canyon. And it was the same thing, you know, road and on either side of it.
Everything's just burned to a crisp.
Burned, and the dead trees hadn't fallen down yet. They're just standing up, and that's what you see. But there was this little unobtrusive sign, low to the ground, painted that same brown that state parks mm-hmm. and national parks use right. everywhere. And it just said, naturally receded by fire in 1988. And then right below that sign, because I was looking down, you could see a carpet that really hadn't drawn my attention before, of tiny little lodgepole pine seedlings.
Up they were coming.
They were. They were growing out of the ground that had been fertilized by the ash from the dead trees. And they were growing from seeds that had been released because of the heat. And it was there, in right at that, with the dead big trees and the lively little trees. And this sign, when I first began, and I do mean first began, understanding the role of trials in a Christian's life, and the reality that God, and this is a began to understand too, that God works all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose.
So those tiny little trees growing up out of the ash, that was a picture for you.
It was. And I have kind of a thing about Yellowstone signs. And I think that's where it started, was with that sign. And that's probably the first spiritual dot that God connected for me in Yellowstone.
Okay. Yeah, I know you have a special affinity for Old Faithful Inn. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I'm a little fuzzy on this because it's been 30 years ago now, mm-hmm. but my recollection is that we were at Old Faithful on one day, and the next day the Park Service shut the road to it down. Mm-hmm. So the fires are getting pretty close. Mm-hmm. And then in September, a few weeks after we had gone home, apparently the fire had almost, they were afraid they were going to lose Old Faithful mm-hmm. Inn. It was that close. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was quite that close when we were there. But mm-hmm. yeah, it was a devastating event. Mm-hmm. But like you say, in spite of that devastation, you see this new life coming up, mm-hmm. you know, from the ashes. And I can easily understand the spiritual picture mm-hmm. that was, you know, sort of imprinted on your mind as you saw that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty significant and long lasting.
Okay. As we wrap up here, Natalie, tell us where people can connect with you and find out more about you.
Okay. Well, my website is natalieogborn.com. I'm on Instagram at natalie_ogborn.
Better spell that too, Natalie.
Okay. Both of them or just the Ogborn?
Do them both.
Okay. NATALIEOGBOURNE.
NatalieOgborn.com.
NatalieOgborn.com. Natalie_Ogborn for Instagram. And that's where I am more than anything. I'm on Facebook occasionally at Natalie Ogborn Writes. And I don't really tweet.
Okay. So your best bet to stay connected with you is Instagram and your website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, thanks an awful lot for coming on the podcast today and telling us a little bit about your experiences and sharing with us your thoughts about Yellowstone and the connection that you've made with the great outdoors and spiritual things. And be sure to let us know when that book gets published.
I'll do that. Thanks for having me.
And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening somewhere other than on our website, please be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. Again, that's caffeinatedthoughts.com, or just Google Caffeinated Thoughts and we'll show up at the top of your search screen. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for email updates. Also, you can listen to our podcast in a variety of places, such as Podbean, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, as well as Google Play. If there's another podcasting service that we're missing that you'd like to see us on, shoot us an email
Shane at, shoot me an email, actually, at shane@caffeinatedthoughts.com, and I'll work to see that happen. So until next time, my friends, have a great weekend. God bless you. This is Shane Vanderhart signing off. Take care. Bye.